We ask over questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome to Dads on the Air for the 16th of June, 2006. Should have an interesting show coming up. First, we're going to talk to Marika from the Fellowship of the Round Table. There's a forum on tonight at New South Wales Parliament House titled Family Law Is Man the Loser. We'll be talking with her about that in a moment. Don't forget, you can listen to this show later at our website, www.dadsontheair.net. And also, don't forget, you can listen to this via live streaming on the 2GLF website. First of all, Marika, are you there? Oh, well, this is the joys of live radio. We hope she's there, but she doesn't seem to be. Marika is from the Fellowship for the Round Table. The forum includes a family lawyer and ourselves from Dads on the Air, as well as Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Foundation. It should be an interesting show. We've got an Indian woman coming on later in the show. She'll be talking about the whole situation for custody in the in India, and we'll also be looking at various things that have been happening in Australia with shared parenting and so on. The Senate Select Committee on Men's Health has just released a report on the state of men's health in Australia, and there's been a lot of disappointment amongst men's health advocates over that issue. So here's a report from Men's Health Australia. They say that while the report was welcome, it was limited and focused largely on a narrow range of biological problems. And Michael Wood from the University of Western Australia, Sydney, said that these social and cultural factors that are causing the poor health of men and boys are ignored despite the bulk of submissions to the inquiry raising these concerns. Some areas of notable absence were attention to issues of fathering, work-family balance for media, unemployment and isolation of older men as a result of changing workplace requirements and the very poor outcomes for boys in education. I think we might have Marika on the line now. Are you there, Marika?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Am I talking to you, John?
Yes, you are.
Wonderful.
Oh, dear, it's the joys of live radio.
Yes.
So, well, thank you very much for coming on to Dads on the Air. Now, I just wondered if you could outline for us the forum that's on tonight. And
yes, of course. Look, we have wonderful speakers. We have your famous self, of course.
And oh, thank you so much.
Equally famous. Look, we have also Mr. Mark Youssef. Now, he is a Master of Law and Legal Practice. He specialises in family law.
And I think there would be a lot of interest in what he's got to say, certainly from our listeners.
Yes, and he's with Armstrong Legal. And look, he is particularly someone who is very much interested in becoming an ICL, an independent children's lawyer. He does the rounds of schools. He's interested in education of children in law. So it's a little bit different, perhaps, than your average lawyer. Has a bit of a feeling for the subject, I think, not just the theory, you know.
What do you mean he goes around the schools?
He goes around to the different schools, apparently, and he is interested in educating children in the area of law. Now, I suppose this is part of what he's interested. He actually majored in philosophy and political science.
Right.
And so he's, I suppose you would say that his main interest would be in the information, in disseminating information at a younger age. One hopes it is neutral. Look, it is always the same thing, John. It doesn't matter if you're talking about my philosophy or your philosophy. It's all a personal angle, isn't it? We all come from a direction of experience.
Oh, yes, and of course this whole area, as I think you've discovered, is so fraught, isn't it? I mean, there's so much emotional charge behind it all.
Look, it's your child. We're talking about our children. And that is, as a mother, of course, and as a father, it's the same thing. It is part of you physically. And so when that child is removed from you, whether you're a father or a mother, it is part of yourself that is removed. And you can never complete that jigsaw puzzle of identity again when you have a piece missing. And when you have a piece missing, John, you're not yourself. You're not balanced. you're over-emotional, it's hard for you to take the steps you should take as a man or a woman. It's a nightmare, isn't it?
Oh, it's an absolute nightmare. We've been a very strong advocate on this program of shared and cooperative parenting after divorce as the only sensible way through the whole mess. And it's look, amazing the forces that rally against what's a common sense solution.
Well, the fourth speaker, because Mr. Mark Youssef was first,
yes.
And you and Peter, the fourth speaker we have is, of course, Mrs. Kathleen Swinburne. Now, she is coming perhaps from a different angle. I have to
the
be
opposite,
fair,
you might
and,
say.
Well, I have to be fair, and that's equally valid because she is a genuine person who has certain experiences in life that have caused her to come to certain conclusions, one of which is that she doesn't believe 50-50 parenting is necessarily a good thing for children. And that's according to one article she's written. I don't know if she has changed her mind, but that's one article. And so it's going to be very interesting. And to get a good discussion going and a good evening, you have to have that controversial element, you know?
Oh, of course.
The last speaker we have is Mr. Warwick Marsh.
Now,
I think a lot of us who keep in touch are aware that that he and Nicola Roxon.
We send him up as Australia's most famous celebrity homophobe now.
He was put out of
office. Really get the joke.
Health minister, and he was put sacked, really. No other way to say it, at the end
yes.
of last year. Look, we respect very much the fact that he's with us. He is someone with children as well. And I'm very interested to hear what he has to say also. And
oh, Warwick's been a regular on this program, and he's always, as you know, he's a sort of a lay priest and a very sincere man who's paid a great deal of attention to this whole arena, basically because he's seen the consequences of kids without their dads. And I think he's been a great trooper. I think it was really unfortunate that Nicola Roxon did what she did. I mean, he was expressing views, basically, that homosexuality was not a valid lifestyle. Now, ironically, very shortly after he lost his job for saying what many people in this country may or legitimately or not believe, the Pope came out saying almost identical things to what Warwick was saying.
Not only that, I believe the co-author of that document, Mary Louise Fowler, she was the Vice President of the Australian Family Association, she actually came out and did say on his behalf that actually his main focus was the well-being of children, and she actually criticised the government for dismissing him. Look, it's difficult, because now imagine, John, that you are part of the government. He is in the same position. Actually, she is in the same position, I guess, as Mr. Warwick Marsh. If Mr. Warwick Marsh treads one foot in the wrong direction, he's out. But it's the same, unfortunately, for Nicola Roxon. And it's the same, perhaps, in all of us. And that's what I suppose we have to question about our whole society and Western civilization and democracy and freedom of the individual.
Oh, I know. It has gone too far, hasn't it? When you can express what is a legitimate view. We don't particularly agree with him here on some things he says. We've had gay dads on the program I wouldn't say regularly, but we've certainly had them on quite a number of occasions, and we're proud to do so. It's not, that's not something we entirely agree with Warwick on, but it's a democracy. He's entirely entitled to his view, I would have thought.
And that's that's what the Fellowship of the Round Table. We're not aligned, as you know, to any movement, and we're not funded. The only thing we say to ourselves when we think, okay, it's about 3 months, now we're going to have another forum, what topic will we choose? Mm. And we look around for topics that we feel need public airing, and we try to get speakers that perhaps come from different angles, because really what it's all about is giving people freedom of speech, letting people hear alternate ideas, and that's something that worries me very much. The media is pretty inflexible sometimes, and perhaps has an agenda. Well, I know it has an agenda, and it's very important, because how can we people come to an conclusion about anything, doesn't matter what it is, global warming, immigration, doesn't matter what it is, without getting as much information as we can get.
No, without the full range of views, absolutely.
Of course.
And I think Yeah, particularly in this area, we've I don't think we would exist if the mainstream media had paid proper attention to the areas that we so often talk about on this show, that there is a real yawning gap for a look at alternative ideas and different people's views. It's just before we go on, we'll give people the details of tonight. It's at 8:30?
Look, it starts at 6.
Then
you have a supper.
This is, well, I didn't show up at 8, isn't it?
Yes, it would make you a little bit late. And they're very strict at Parliament House. You just go through security. It protects us all, I guess. 6 p.m. it starts. Have a supper. And then the speakers begin at 6:30 sharp. Because, again, we have that security at Parliament House, we have to leave at 8:30, so it's not a very late evening. It's in the Jubilee Room, so that when you come in, you turn to the right straight away, and you'll have people who show you where that room is. It's a beautiful room.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful room. It's a really historic room within Parliament House on Macquarie Street. Really beautiful room, isn't it?
It's worthwhile visiting. If you've never been, it's worthwhile to look at. Part of our history, and in fact, that history is displayed pictorially around the room, and well worth looking at. Each speaker, as I say, speaks for 20 minutes, and then after that, you have your chance to ask questions supervised from the floor. And that gives the audience a chance to be included. And as I said, look, if you have any questions, you're very welcome. May I give my mobile number, John?
Absolutely.
Please ring me 0404 457 453.
Now, this is on at 6 o'clock. You arrive at 6 o'clock at New South Wales Parliament House in Macquarie Street. It begins at 6:30. There is a door price of $20.
That's correct.
Is that a donation or that's a you must pay $20?
Yes, that really covers the supper, plus we pay for security of the room, so really that's
really
covering
you
our
you should throw in $20.
And my name's Marijke, and as I said, you're very welcome to ring me about that. And otherwise, do look at our website on fortaustralia.com, fortaustralia.com, and you'll see details again about the forum and what to do with regard to booking.
Now, how did you come up with the subject, family law, is the man the loser? What was the process by which you arrived at this?
Well, can you imagine how many women rang and asked me that?
I bet. They weren't too happy, I hear.
Oh, my goodness. Look, it's going to be very interesting, John, because you have a lot of angry ladies coming.
Oh, I hope not.
No. Look, you'll be safe.
Well, we don't have angry men coming that I know of anyway.
Actually, the thing is this, that when we choose a subject, when we choose a topic, we have to look at two things. First of all, of course, what topic can we choose that's current and needs that public attention? But secondly, it has to be a topic that is so worded and so designed that it gets people to come in on a winter's evening at 6 o'clock. And so if I would have just put, let's say, as a topic, family law in Australia, yes. People would look at it, okay, family law in Australia. But if I say, is the man the loser, that is where the emotive part of it comes in. That is where we could have equally said, is the woman the loser? But we chose, is the man the loser, because I am very well aware, with my background in psychology, of the very big statistical correspondence between depression and suicide in men, even though I'm sure it happens in women too, but particularly men, and family law outcomes.
Oh, absolutely.
And being aware of that, I thought this was the better way to go. And quite frankly, if a man looks at this, I'm hoping he will say, look, that's something I can relate to. I'm going to come along. And if it's a woman that looks at it, she might say, oh, that is absolutely, as they say, BS. And I'm coming along.
Appalling. I'm coming along as well.
I'm coming up. Look, whatever. We just would like people to become, to be motivated to come along, because I think it's going to be a really great evening.
Oh, I hope so. That's
I hope the rain stops, John. I hope the rain stops.
It's a very interesting range of guests you've got as well, isn't it? With the family lawyer and Asked from Dad's on the Air and, you know, and the other side as well.
Yeah, really interesting. And Warwick, who's been an absolute trooper in this whole arena. Did you personally counsel separated men when in your job?
No, I haven't. And in fact, this whole area, John, apart from the aspect of the suicide depression, which is something I'm very interested in, have been for many years, this area of family law, I must say, I didn't know a lot about, not much more than the average person. Until I began to look at it as a possible topic, I began to realize that we need to look at it. And then, of course, it was I tried to find speakers that, you know, I thought would cover it. And it, because it's a very emotive area, John, and it's a personal area, it is hard when you don't know the network. You don't know the people personally. You haven't got connections to be able to work out now, you know, where will I go and whom should I ask?
Oh, I know. I know you were talking to Sue Price at one point from Men's Rights Agency, but she's not included in the final lineup, which is a bit unfortunate, but anyway. She would have been very entertaining too.
Yes, there are a lot of things that I've learned too. So I'm hoping that the audience will learn a lot of things as well. So that's what I hope. The difficulty when one is running, of course, a forum, contrary to, say, the Centre for Independent Studies, John, we are not funded.
No, we're not either, unfortunately.
No, and when you have a sponsor, you can advertise and you can spend money on advertising.
Yeah,
where is... but we have a lot of people who've been to past forums, and we usually get a good, you know, good roll-up of people. So,
well, as you know, it's an incredibly well-timed topic. There's been a lot of movement in the newspapers on this over recent weeks. It looks like the current government has the stomach to roll back the reforms of the Howard government, which did encourage cooperative and shared parenting after divorce. They didn't go for the 50-50 split down the middle, but they certainly changed the legislation sufficiently to encourage people to cooperate after separation instead of, you know, lawyers at 50 paces and all the enormous harm that that does.
Yes.
So it is a very topical, very, very topical. And,
and something that you know, you and Peter know so much more about than I would, and definitely the lay person. So that's why we're coming to hear all this information and the experiences. I think a lot of us need to hear about them.
All right, we'll just give all the details again and we'll sign off. So it's arrive at 6 o'clock at New South Wales Parliament House in Macquarie Street. Tell me if I get any of this wrong.
I will.
You pay $20, you'll get a supper and the forum. There will be speaking. There'll be Kathleen Swinburne from the Lone Parents Union. There'll be myself, John Stapleton. There'll be Peter Vanderford, also from Dads on the Air. There'll be Yusuf, the lawyer from...
Armstrong Legal.
Good on you. And he'll also be talking about family law. It'd be very good to have a lawyer talking about the issue. And Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Foundation.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, who of course has also been a controversial figure in recent months, really, unfortunately, perhaps, but... That's great, Marika. Thank you so much for coming on. And the website, we better mention again.
www, of course, .fortaustralia, fortaustralia.com.
Thank you so
much.
And thank you, thank you for organising the forum. It's a really terrific contribution to our democracy. It's wonderful.
Thank you, John, for the opportunity to come on the air.
We'll be back.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
You're listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia, and worldwide on the web. My name is Peter van der Voort, and my guest today is Uma Chella. Uma is a spokesperson for the powerful Indian lobby and activist group All India Forgotten Women. This group is a strong supporter of fathers' rights in India and is very well aware how not only men, but also women, and especially children, are denied their fundamental human rights under the current international system of family law. This system sees millions of responsible, loving, non-custodial parents forcibly being removed from their children against their will and is complicit in denying the children of separated parents their fundamental human right to love and be loved by both of their parents. All India Forgotten Women stands for true gender equality and demands that civil and criminal laws are equally applicable to men and women. We now have Uma on the line. Uma Chella, welcome to Dad's on the Air. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here too.
We're somewhat excited here because you're the first Indian person to come onto our show who represents the parents of India. And it finally gives our listeners an opportunity to obtain an inside view of what conditions are like in India for separated parents.
Yes, thank you.
Can we perhaps start with by asking you to briefly tell us your personal story and how you became involved as an activist?
Yeah, my brother actually got married in August of 2005. And very soon, him and his wife started having differences and disagreements. And around December 2005, we got the news that my father was critically ill and he was in the hospital. At that time, my brother and I, we were residents of United States of America. And we quickly flew over to India. We knew that our father had just a few days before he breathed his last. So we spent most of our time in the hospital. And during that time, my brother's wife filed a criminal case against us, which is basically commonly known as the dowry law. It is IPC section 498A. And she had us arrested, my brother and I. And we could not even see our father during his last moments because they were successful in delaying our bail until after my father's funeral was over. So I immediately, got onto the, I mean, as soon as we were released on bail and my father's last rites and whatever else formalities were done, I got onto the internet to check if this was a problem that anybody else was facing. And I realized there were thousands of people just like me. So, and not to be one of the people who will suffer in silence or just, blame my fate, I wanted to do something about it, and that's how I got involved in the family movement or men's rights movement.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's not until we actually become involved in it ourselves that we realise how bad it is. You're a spokesperson now. You're the founder of the group All India Forgotten Women. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about this group and and what they stand for?
All India Forgotten Women is basically an organization that was formed in response to the large-scale arrests of families, husbands and relatives, under criminal laws like the Dowry Prohibition Act and the IPC Section 498A. And the idea is we wanted to show that this is not just a problem of men. This is a problem faced by families. And we wanted to be the voice of women who are against the misuse of protections and privileges that are given to women. So that was the main reason we started it. Because very often the things that we are fighting for are ruled out as men's issues. But we see it as a larger problem. So that is the idea behind All India Forgotten Women?
I think it's interesting because there's more and more women speaking out against the laws in general and how it affects women just as bad as men, and of course especially the children. And it's interesting, if I can just read a little bit about what's on a paragraph that's on your website, and perhaps you can enlarge on that a little bit. What is worse is that radical women's groups and vested interests have successfully subverted the real meaning and purpose of women's empowerment and gender equality, and are promoting discrimination, injustice, and serious human rights abuses in the name of women's rights.
That's right. Yeah. We all agree that violence is bad. It is bad whether it is against, committed against men or women. And we are all speaking against violence. But and also, we believe in equal rights. But what most of these radical women's groups are doing is taking the issue of women's empowerment and women's rights, and they are lobbying for policies and legislation which are basically against, they are violating human rights. They are basically portraying that all men are abusive, and that, you know, the woman never lies, and her word is to be taken at face value, and the men that are accused are to be penalized without giving them any... giving them access to due process of law.
It's almost like a gender witch hunt that's on the way, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so let's look at some of the issues and how they affect the population of India. First of all, can you tell us what the failure rate of marriages is in India?
I would say it is close to 40% in large cities. And it's probably lower in smaller towns, but they're catching up very quickly. In probably rural areas, unofficially separated couples run in large numbers, but you know, we wouldn't know because they don't go to courts.
Mm-hmm. And then how is custody of the children decided in courts? Because that's probably one of the most horrifying issues when you're dealing with forcibly having been removed from your children.
Yes. When it comes to custody of children, invariably the mother gets the custody. All the courts favor mothers. And even in cases where the father files for visitation or custody, at best they're able to get maybe like 2 to 6 hours a month, which is the reason why a lot of fathers are frustrated, because fathers are being treated like visitors. So there's no question of custody for fathers. If they're able to get some visitation, which is 2 to 6 hours a month, that is a great achievement right now.
Mm-hmm. Could I just take you back on a little bit on the last question there? You said 40% of marriages fail, like in the city, in the more built-up areas. Can you give us some idea of, in numbers, can you put a figure on that, for what 40% represents?
No, because this is on... We are talking about large cities like Bombay, Delhi, and cities like that, so since the population varies, and I wouldn't exactly know the numbers, but this is the trend.
Right, and you don't know the you don't know how many marriages fail in actual number figures, how many people are affected. For instance. No. So the majority of mothers obtain custody, and do you know how many fathers actually obtain custody of their children in percentage terms?
Rarely. Only in cases where a mother herself abandons the children. That's when the father gets to keep the children. Because our legal system actually considers fathers as incapable of nurturing children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why you rarely ever find any father having custody of the children when there's a separation or divorce.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, what, perhaps 10% maximum fathers?
Less than that. I would even less. Say 1%.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And what... the Indian family justice system, how long has that been actually been in operation, the current system that you have?
since 1955.
Oh, okay. And that replaced the Hindu justice system?
Yes,
right. How many, can you put any number figures on how many children are actually affected by the separation of their parents?
See, the thing is, even divorce has become only rampant in the recent years, so that's why we do not have hard statistics on those. And official statistics are unavailable for, you know, the number of children that are, suffering from, suffering because of separation of parents. But, Children's Rights Initiative for Shared Parenting is the organization which has taken the initiative to push for, gathering data on this, the number of children that are affected.
Do you have any idea how many, what percentage of people actually go to court? Like in our country here, for instance, it's estimated or it's known that between 5% and 6% of cases actually go to court, and most of them are settled out of court, or people just walk away and don't have the resources. So, do you have a figure of how many of those 40% of divorced families actually end up in court?
All of them do. All of them actually go to court because right now this is a business that's run by the police and the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that the police and the lawyers work as middlemen. They basically encourage the women to file cases and promise them that since the system is heavily favoring women, they will get what they want. So all of them end up in the court. Now, it's a different matter how many of them drop out at different stages during the proceedings. I think that a small percentage, ends up going through all the proceedings all the way and getting a verdict. But somewhere, because the court proceedings in India take very long. In some cases, they've taken up to 15 years. Especially when a man has filed for divorce. So people do drop out during the proceedings, but all of them go to court.
And what about, how are they represented then? Not everybody has the financial resources, or is it more of a middle class people that go to court?
I think that it's not really, I don't think the question of affordability has still become an issue in India.
Okay.
We have lawyers that of different ranges, and then the family court actually does not require a lawyer. Lawyer is more of a person who will push your paperwork, but the family courts in India actually prefer that the parties speak for themselves. So you can actually hire a lawyer who's very inexpensive, but who knows how to push papers. And, drag on your cases for as long as you want.
So is it more like a mediation centre?
In a way, yes.
Yes. We're speaking with Uma Chella from India, and we're going to go to a short break, and we'll be back.
The pain is intense for both father and child. It's hard to cope with a life full of stress. That's leaving us empty, our emotions a mess. Despite our separation, our love will not die. Though many a night, Dad, we remember and cry. So let's look to the future with courage and hope. It will keep us together. Come a time before we're too old.
discover the lies that have kept us apart.
No more will they try stealing what's in our hearts.
And so we will conquer betrayal and pain.
The truth we will learn and our freedom we'll gain.
So keep asking questions of why is it so? And sooner or later, the truth we will know.
You're listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia. And don't forget, the program will be available on our website later today at www.dadsontheair.net. My name's Peter Van der Voort, and I'm speaking with Uma Chella, who is the spokesperson for the lobby and activist group All India Forgotten Women. Uma, how many fathers' rights groups are there in India? Do you have any idea?
Or should fathers' rights groups? Actually, there are a lot of men's rights groups who are supporting fathers, mm-hmm. but there is just one group so far which is exclusively fighting for the rights of fathers, which is mm-hmm. also fighting for the rights of children, and it's called the Children's Rights Initiative for Shared Parenting.
And of course, you're fighting along the same lines. So is there much cooperation and networking between the parenting groups in India?
Yes, there's a lot of cooperation, and every time there's an event, travel from all different parts of the country to show our support to whichever group is conducting the event.
And can you tell us have the parenting groups had any success in improving the conditions for non-custodial parents, and what activities do they undertake to achieve this?
As far as activities go, we try to provide moral support. So that these fathers do not lose hope and they are able to actually fight for their rights. And we give them free legal advice depending. Basically, we have, over the last 5 years, we have been able to gather a lot of experience. So we share that and we give free legal advice. We conduct a lot of awareness campaigns to bring fathers together. The fathers' rights actually have taken prominence only like a year ago with the launch of CRISP. So we have actually been able to help fathers get reasonable custody decisions. You know, maybe the numbers are not very large, maybe about 10 fathers so far, but I think that because, you know, with a lot more fathers gathering courage and joining the group and making themselves strong enough to fight, we should be able to make a lot of improvements in the conditions.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea of numbers of the membership numbers of your group and the CRISP?
Our group, All India Forgotten Women, consists of all the mothers and sisters of husbands, which runs into a couple of thousand members. The CRISP membership, I think, is close to 1,000.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, with a bit of growth, maybe we'll see a bit of more activity, I suppose, and more becoming more vocal, I guess, in years to come.
So far, there was nobody to even hear out the problems of these people. Mm-hmm. So right now they are, I think the members go through different stages. You know, the first part is actually healing and gaining the confidence that they can actually do it.
Yes.
Then they are able to understand what we are talking about, because a lot of methods that we suggest are not really familiar even to the lawyers, because the lawyers do a very formulaic kind of take a formulaic approach, and they just have some standard things they say and do, but really cannot help their clients in any big ways. But we are able to come up with strategies that help fathers. Yeah.
Uma, how are child support issues dealt with in India?
Maintenance of children is considered responsibility of the father.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, exclusive responsibility of the father. And the courts take it very seriously if a father does not pay child support, even in cases where he actually does not have a job. But they don't show the same amount of rigor when it comes to mothers denying contact with children, denying contact of fathers with children, or when mothers disobey a custody or visitation orders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So fathers
are mainly treated as ATM machines.
So what happens when fathers obtain custody? The mother is not asked if the mother earns more, has a higher income than the father. She doesn't have to pay child support because the father is responsible no matter what.
Yeah, even in the rare cases where the child support goes to the child custody is granted to the father, which as I said is very very rare.
Yes.
In those cases, no, the mother is not required to pay child support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the general community view and perception of the way family courts handle the issue of separated families? Is there much community awareness?
The general public, I think, is not well aware of how the family court system or even the criminal court system runs. It's only when they get into the system that they understand how things are. And the people who are familiar with the courts know that the family courts are heavily biased towards women. And women use all kinds of laws, civil and criminal laws, to portray the father as abusive and to remove him from the children's lives. Courts take a very lenient view of this. And the main assumption is that women do not lie or do anything to jeopardize their own family life. And, courts are very strict about husbands obeying the court orders, paying up maintenance and child support, but they are lenient when it comes to women making false allegations or disobeying orders. The courts take very long to resolve custody matters, during which time the children actually grow up and, they do not even know that there is someone called a father. And, divorces are granted sooner if a woman files for it. But if a man files for divorce, it can take much longer, and sometimes, like I said, it can go up to 15 years. Judges are reluctant to pass any orders against women, be it cases of divorce or maintenance or child custody or perjury or, even malicious prosecution.
So the courts do not punish the custodial parent who is withholding contact to their fathers? They're not being punished for that?
You can... we really wish that the system actually used the word parent, but unfortunately, this is a completely a one-sided thing. So mm-hmm. right now, we do not have the luxury to say custodial parent. The custodial parent is always the mother. So, and the system allows the mothers to actually, do all the misuse that I'm talking about.
It's horrible, isn't it? I saw the YouTube message of the father on YouTube that he put on there when he was committing suicide recently, the Indian father, and it was horrible.
Yes.
Does your government make any official statistics available on how many non-custodial parents resort to suicide following forced separation from their children?
Well, Unfortunately, no. And one of the main reasons for the formation of CRISP is this. Basically, what happens in India is every time a married woman commits suicide, it immediately becomes a statistic of dowry death, whether or not it happened because of dowry harassment. It automatically is given the label of dowry death. But when a man commits suicide, a married man commits suicide, it's always either due to mysterious reasons or some financial problem. So although annually over 56,000 married men commit suicide, the reasons are not probed into and no attention is paid, either legally or even the media, which quickly laps up a story of a woman committing suicide, just dismisses a man's suicide as, you know, mysterious or due to financial problems. So one of the recent case of Syed Maktoum, you know, the example of a suicide that I sent you, in his case, since he was a member of CRISP, we came to know about it. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't know if it's the right word, he left a note stating the reasons. But and that's the reason why we're able to follow up on it and make sure some action is taken. But almost all cases of men's suicides go unnoticed, mainly because the media is silent about men's suicide and the judiciary is completely apathetic towards the welfare of men.
Awful, isn't it? Awful. Do many parents make use of false abuse allegations in order to separate other parents, their fathers, from their children?
Like I said, it's hard to talk about, you know, separating parent using false abuse allegations, because it's mainly the women that are they enjoy this credibility under law. That's the reason why they are able to use false allegations of abuse in order to separate the father from their children. So it's only the women. It's probably possible that if the system allows, men may do the same thing. But right now in India, the system is so heavily biased towards women that they can get away with false allegations of abuse and get everything they want in a divorce or child custody battle or a maintenance battle.
We're speaking with Uma Chella from India. We're going to go to another short break and we'll be back.
As sure as the sun in the morning will rise and the moon casting shadows will follow so wise, we won't stop loving a child that is lost till the end of our days, and no matter what cost. As sure as the shape of a circle is round and four corners in every square can be found, we love our children, our own flesh and blood, despite our alienation which came like a flood. Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. As sure as the rising tide will come in, and there's no one on earth who's without sin, as loving fathers for our children we pine, but our spirit's not broken nor our will in decline. As sure as a peace will be followed by war, and some will be rich, some will be poor, we want to protect our children from harm, but we are prevented and try to stay calm. Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. As sure as
colours, black is not white, and food we must eat to stay healthy and sprite. We won't turn our back on our children we love, though some days it's hard and the going gets tough, as some will die young and others grow old. Some tell their story while others withhold. As fathers we care and will never give up the love of our children, which some try to obstruct. Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like...
We're back with Dads on the Air.
We're back with Uma Chella, who is the spokesperson for the lobby and activist group All India Forgotten Women. Uma, is there much involvement by the health profession, such as psychologists and so on, in the separation of children from their fathers as part of the court process?
None whatsoever. None. In fact, parent-child alienation is not even recognized as a problem in our system. So, you know, nobody actually understands that there are psychological implications on the children when the parents separate. So it's almost as if the father is dispensable. So nobody even wonders, you know, nobody even thinks about the possibility of the need for psychologists in separation issues.
So, and then, in like we mentioned just earlier, the issue of false abuse allegations, are the false accusations, are they punishable at all? Does anybody get punished for?
Pardon?
Does anyone get punished for making false allegations of abuse?
None that I know of, but some of us have actually filed cases. When we had strong evidence to show that many cases we abuse. Now, when a man is expected to prove that he did not abuse, it's very difficult. How do you prove that you have not beaten someone?
I mean,
proving that someone has beaten you is probably something that's possible. To prove that you have not beaten someone is impossible.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But we have, in many cases that we have been able to gather evidence, we have filed cases against women, but what happens in those cases is the judges drag those cases on, and almost as if they're hoping for a transfer because they're afraid to give a judgment which is not in favor of the woman. And if they have to go by the merits of the case, they would have to give a ruling against her.
So perjury is basically allowed to run amok in the family courts?
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same everywhere, I think. Now, you mentioned parent alienation is not actually seen as such in the courts, not accepted as a reason for questioning the mother.
No, it is not. That is exactly the reason why children and men suffer.
Mm.
For example, the wife recently in Bangalore, one of the members. Actually managed to get custody orders in his favor, but the wife disobeyed the orders, and but the court did not take it too seriously, and this father suffered a heart attack. And the reason why the child custody may have been granted to the father is because there was solid proof that the father is a better parent.
Mm-hmm.
And even in this case, the parental alienation was not dealt with seriously.
Uma, did the Indian courts make any decisions in favour of 50-50 equal shared physical parenting time custody orders or not?
Almost none. I mean, none of the cases, in fact, like I said, if you are able to, if a father is able to manage weekend visitation, just weekend visitation, and is able to get the orders obeyed, that is a great achievement. And most cases, the fathers are only able to see their children 2 to 6 hours a month. That is the majority of the fathers, 2 to 6 hours a month.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? So there must be many problems with children's behaviour in years to come. You know, it's they're ruined lives, aren't they?
Yeah, this is something that is only coming up because of the formation of CRISP. But most people don't think it's a problem that, you know, that the child needs both parents, and there are different things, different roles played by the mother and the father, and only, you know, through access to both parents will the child develop into a well-adjusted and well-groomed individual.
Uma, there are special considerations that are unique to India, and you mentioned it earlier, the dowry system. Could you perhaps explain to our listeners how this impacts on the outcome of settlement and family court disputes?
Actually, it's very strange. Dowry is today almost a myth. It happens in some places. You know, in some rural areas, I think that there is still this practice of dowry as is portrayed in the Western media. But in most parts of the country, what happens in a marriage is that both sides of the family exchange gifts. And the girl's side of the family usually tends to transfer a lot of wealth to the daughter at the time of marriage, because, you know, the sons get the property after the demise of the father. Whatever they would like, whatever the parents want to give the daughter, they ensure that they give it at the time of marriage, because they don't want the girl to not get a reasonable share in case they don't do it while they're still alive. So that's the reason why they give a lot of gifts and you know, transfer wealth to the woman, and all is fine until the marriage is on the rocks. What are gifts at the time of marriage are termed dowry when the marriage is on the rocks. And that's the reason why you have so many dowry cases going on in the country. And the Western media is very happy to portray India as a country which has this backward practice of, you know, extorting money from the girl's family and, you know, burning them, you know, if the demands are not met. This is a myth. And it's taking us a lot of effort to dispel this myth, because most of the radical feminist organizations have made a business out of taking a pet issue from every country, and unfortunately the pet issue with India is dowry and dowry debt.
You said it's actually a myth. So was it never the case, or it's long ago finished?
Dowry, I mean, I am saying that the concept of dowry and dowry harassment is at present a myth. Now, it may have existed in different forms, but the thing is, bad and good elements, or good sides of a particular practice, exist in all countries. So, dowry, if you think about dowry, you know, as an exclusive contribution of the girl's family to the boy's family, mostly it is done as a good gesture for, you know, helping the new couple settle down. And you will, what is a bad thing is greed. And greed is, greed exists in all countries. Now, a few greedy people have, you know, harassed women for money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you portray an entire culture, you know, or a practice itself as bad. That's what's happened with the practice of dowry.
So burning no longer exists?
No. In fact, I have written an article about kitchen accidents, which have been in kitchen accidents in India happened much more often in the past than they do now, because of the outdated, or rather the primitive technology that we had in the stoves or whatever that people were using, and a lot of people died. But in the case of brides, you know, when you get married, you know, as a young woman, you know, you come with not a whole lot of experience running a kitchen, and with really bad technology, you know, what happens is the accidents that happen to young women are, you know, larger in number than they do with other people, you know, whether it's men or children or experienced women. So young married women are more prone to kitchen accidents, and I wouldn't deny that if they were like really cruel people, a few cruel people who are criminal minded who did this. But average Indian family is not criminal minded.
No.
But when your young daughter, you know, dies, you know, even small differences and disagreements that happen in every marriage or every family, you know, they become like a jumping off point to say that this is the reason why my daughter was killed. You know, a lot of times, in fact, the statistics show that the conviction rate is really, really small, because, you know, it's not possible to actually, you know, burn a person. You got to be a really hardcore criminal
yes,
to do
yes,
this.
Yes.
But, you know, to portray the culture, you know, Indian culture as something that nurtures this kind of criminal mindedness is even like it doesn't make even sense, you know.
The Hindu religion was very discriminating against women in the past. How do the leaders of the Hindu religion now view this, the power that women have achieved now?
I would actually disagree with the statement that the Hindu religion discriminated against women in the past. I would say certain families discriminated against their women, and many families actually respected their women and gave them their due place. It is just that we had different roles to play in the family. Our traditional roles were different, and which were very gracefully accepted both by men and women. I have grandmothers who did not go to school, but they were very powerful women. And I come from a very traditional middle class family, and there are many families like that. Now, the other thing is, in India, even today, many families, especially those that are not affluent or live in small towns, are very protective of their girls. So when families are protective about their girls, it can be interpreted as stifling their freedom and therefore discriminating. It is the opposite. They are very protective to their girls, towards their girls, and they think that it's okay. You know, when it comes to a guy, they will think that it's okay. He can endanger his life. It's okay. You know. So that is the difference. In fact, the priority that's given to women in Indian culture is it's so much that you know. I think the standards that the Western cultures use for the importance that's given to women is different than other cultures.
So do you think then that the old system was better for women in the long run? Do you think?
The what system? Pardon?
That the old system you were just describing, where women had less power, but in some sense than they have today. But do you think they were better off under the old system?
I wouldn't say women had less power. Men and women had different domains of power, and that slowly changed. And I think this is healthy too. I mean, the cultures change with time, and now we have more equal relationships, which is also healthy. But the thing is, when we want equality, it means we should work towards equal rights and responsibilities.
Yes.
What's happening now is there is so much talk about equal rights for women, but you know, and you would like to free women from all their traditional roles. But in India especially, nobody wants to free the men from their traditional roles. So what happens is women are, and right now living in the 21st century, but men are still being made to live in the 16th century or something, because they are still bound to their traditional responsibilities. They are still considered, you know, to be the breadwinner. They have to be the one who will protect the family. You know, under any circumstance, it's the man who is responsible for the maintenance and protection of the family. be it parents, for example, today the predicament of the modern Indian man is you are blamed if you are not taking care of your parents because it's your duty as a son to do that. At the same time, it's your job to please your wife. Now, what happens? What is happening with modern women is that they no longer want to be in joint families. So, it's almost like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Yes.
So, displease your wife. You're still blamed. If you if you're not able to take care of your parents because your wife does not want to, you're still blamed. So that is one of the biggest reasons why men are unable to handle the stress.
Yes. Yes. Uma, we're nearly out of time. Finally, what do you think then, what do you see as a possible solution to this what can only be described as an epidemic of forced removal of children from responsible, loving parents? What do you see can be done, or what's the answer?
I would say there are, I have like four different levels at which this needs to be addressed. The first thing is the parents. Now, when parents are contemplating divorce, they should be given, the counseling should be mandatory, and they should be counseled on shared parenting, how it benefits them and the children, and this should be done by a panel of experts and hopefully under the supervision of the family court. This kind of early intervention can, you know, like clarifying issues of child custody, finance, education, health, any other issues of upbringing before you proceed with the divorce. What it can do is it will eliminate unnecessary battles in the court, and it can help save time both for the parents and children, because what's more important is that the childhood is not wasted, you know, and the parents are able to enjoy the company of the children and give them the love and care that they deserve. And secondly, the judiciary needs to be sensitized. Like I said, the Indian legal system does not recognize a child's right to access of both parents, nor does it recognize a father's right to access to children. So one has to sensitize the legal system about the importance of a father in a child's life, and that even if a man is a bad spouse, he doesn't always have to be a bad father.
Yes.
So, and you know, like they say, a father is equal to 1,000 teachers. One must recognize that what is in the best interest of the child is what should be taken into account, and not what is politically correct. And, you know, also the courts need to be sensitized about how either abduction by children by a mother, or, you know, alienation from either parent is child abuse, you know.
Yes.
And the gender bias must be eliminated from family law. Fathers and mothers must be given equal rights. And not just that, I would go to the extent of saying that even grandparents must be allowed to have access to grandchildren, because a family is not just father, mother and child, not in India at least. In India, we consider family, you know, to be larger. So even grandparents must be allowed right to access. And then, you know, I think the government has to step in, and it has to separate the Ministry of Child Welfare, set up a separate ministry, because right now we have a Ministry for Women and Child Welfare. Basically, the women and children are clubbed, and this ministry has done nothing for women, and really, you know, nothing even for children. So we think that, you know, there has to be a separate ministry for children, which recognizes that in addition to child labor, child abuse and malnutrition, education and such issues, even child custody, you know, the child's inalienable right to both parents should be recognized as a children's right. And funds should be allocated, you know, like you asked me, we need statistics and, you know, studies. So funds should be allocated by the government to do research on the magnitude of the problem, the intensity of the problem, and what kind of an adverse impact parental alienation can, you know, have on children. And then I would say everyone, parents, judiciary, government, everyone should be educated about the social catastrophe that has befallen, you know, other countries, especially the Western countries, because, you know, because of these high rates of divorce and, you know, removal of child from having access to one parent. from what I understand, you know, research findings all over the world are showing that children do best when both parents are actively involved in their life, even after separation or divorce. And, you know, not to delve into all the negatives in too much detail, it's just an example of United States, where it has been shown that, you know, without a father in their lives, children are five times more likely to live in poverty or commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. So if the present trend in India is allowed to continue, I think we will also become a fatherless society, and we should probably expect more individuals with behavioral problems and, you know, socially undesirable attitudes. So the solutions that I suggested, I think, will go a long way in ensuring that, you know, family harmony and social stability is maintained in the country.
Uma, you've been a fascinating guest, and we'd like to thank you so much for joining us today and wish you much success in your quest to obtain true gender equality for both men and women in the application of civil and criminal law in India. And we certainly agree 100%. And I think that's what's happening all over the Western world. We're all basically aiming for that gender equality rather than domination by one or the other. So we wish you all the best, and thank you once again.
Thank you. Thank you, and it was a pleasure being with you.
You're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia. And don't forget, the program will be available on our website later today at www.dadsontheair.net. My name's Peter Van der Voort, and we'll be back after the break.
That was your voice. I thought that was my car. Now we ain't ever met before, but I know who you are. You're living in my house, and I'm living in a tent. And don't laugh, this second job of mine is paying both our rents. You're out here buying Happy Meals, and I'm eating rice and pintos. Can you so much as crack a smile at me, man? Well, I come through this hair window. Hell, you took my wife, and you took my kids, and you took that life that I used to live. My pride, the pool, the boat, my tools, my dreams, the dog, the cat. Yeah, I think that's just about everything. Oh, I almost forgot. Do you want fries for that? Your ketchup's in the bag, and her check is in the mail. I hope your chicken's raw inside, and I hope your bun is stale. I'm supposed to tell you please come back, but how about this instead? I hope you both choke on a pickle, man, that would tickle me to death. I don't know what you're waiting on, you're holding up the line. Oh man, you ain't got no change coming back. Are you out of your mind? My tools, my dreams, the dog, the cat. Yeah, I reckon that's all there is. Do you want fries for that? That about covers it. Do you want fries for that? There's your nuggets.
Don't you, hey, don't laugh at me, you.
There you are. That's the first Indian woman we have had on the show from a group in India looking after women's interests but also speaking out on men's behalf. Really interesting. Some late news coming in. Good news too. Dads in Distress has got funding extended for another year. There was a lot of concern that the group was losing funding under the Labor government, and that's been extended for 12 months. They, of course, do a lot of work at the coalface with a lot of very distressed blokes, so that's great work. Great work, and that's, yeah, really good news. Don't forget, there is a forum on tonight at New South Wales Parliament House titled Family Law Is the Man the Loser? It's put on by a group called the Fellowship of the Round Table. You can see their website at fortaustralia.com, fortaustralia.com. And they're a group that organises various debates and forums over controversial subjects. And, of course, family law has always been a controversial subject here in Australia. Don't forget, as we said, dadsontheair.net. You can hear this show later and look at our archives. The forum tonight has Mr. Mark Youssef. He's a Master of Law and Legal Practice, specialising in family law. John Stapleton and myself, me and Peter Vanderford from Dads on the Air will also be speaking, along with Kathleen Swinburne. She describes herself as a business analyst and president of the Sole Parents Union. And as well, Mr. Warwick Marsh, Dads for Kids, the Fatherhood Foundation. Of course, Warwick Marsh has done some great work over the years with dads of all kinds, separated and not separated. It's $20, $20 to get in the door. Each speaker will talk for about 20 minutes, and they treat the topic as they choose. Should be particularly interesting. Family law. Is the man the loser? That's on at the New South Wales Parliament House in Macquarie Street in the Jubilee Room from 6 o'clock tonight. It runs from 6 to about 8:30. Now, there is also coming up in Canberra tomorrow a big forum on men's health, and there's been a lot of debate about that. The government ran around trying to get people's views on men's health, and of course it's all written up by bureaucrats who have not the slightest interest in reflecting properly what's been said to them, and there's been a lot of disappointment about the report. And of course the biggest single threat to men's health is the constant bullying and harassment by the Child Support Agency and Child Support Agency officers, and I don't think that even gets a mention. We estimate that more than 5,000 fathers have died since Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister, came into power, and that is one of the greatest scandals of Australian public policy you'll ever see. And the fact that there is no inquiry, no Royal Commission, no concern from our politicians is just a mind-boggling disgrace. This is from Michael Woods, the from the University of Western Sydney, and he says that there's been a lot of disappointment over the report from the Senate Select Committee on Men's Health. He says, while some of the recommendations of the committee are welcome, overall these are limited and focus largely on a narrow range of biological problems. Those social and cultural factors that are causing the poor health of men and boys are ignored, despite the bulk of submissions to the inquiry raising these concerns. Some areas of notable absence were attention to issues of fathering, work-family balance for males, unemployment and isolation of older men as a result of changing workplace requirements, and the very poor outcomes for boys in education. The report, and of course we're seeing up to two-thirds of admissions now into universities are all women, and where's the outcry for equality now? Don't see it, do we?
The report seems to lean towards the simplistic strategies of better managing biological breakdown and changing behaviour. Those aspects of the daily life of men and boys that undermine their health are studiously avoided. There are many worrying aspects in the absences from the report. And firstly, he says much of what requires action to improve the health of men and boys, fathering, boys' education, workplace concerns, social isolation, and so on, is not in the province of the Department of Health. An effective response to male health issues requires a coordinating body that can liaise across government departments. For women, the Office of the Status of Women is able to fulfil such a valuable role. For men and boys, there is only a recommendation that all government departments consider effects of legislation and policies on both men and women. And of course we know that very little consideration is given to the impacts of men on men. Without a body that has some oversight for males, this is unlikely to lead to any more than lip service from already pressured departments. Of course. Recommendation 6 is the only one that considers boys, and it suggests that we will address their complex and myriad health issues by simply encouraging them to take greater responsibility for their own health. Powerful departments of boys' health, such as school experience, are neglected. Powerful determinants of boys' health, such as school experience, are neglected. Yet boys have been found in numerous reports to be disengaged from schooling. So if you can look that up at Men's Health Australia, there's a lot of material on there reacting to the government inquiry. The lower completion rates of schooling by boys may have been acceptable in the 1990s when it was still believed there would be many unskilled and semi-skilled jobs for early male school leavers, but the nature of work has changed and many more boys will spend their adolescence disengaged from mainstream society and grow up to be underemployed or unemployed, with the resultant health and social cost to be borne by the next generation. And as well, the third world health of Aboriginal men in remote areas is to be addressed through better trauma treatment, yet no mention of addressing the causes of their disastrous health or even the causes of the high levels of trauma is contained in the recommendations. And of course, we've seen endless programs rolled out in Central Australia for women's groups. Absolutely nothing, of course, for men. And even when the Sex Discrimination Commissioner went out to Central Australia, many women were saying we need programs for our men. Of course, they're nowhere to be found while they roll out millions and millions and millions of dollars for women's interests. Why should one gender be given so much and the other so little? Why should there be such discrimination in public policy? We're seeing really negative effects and negative consequences as a result of this massive bias in social policy and public policy in Australia. While the media releases accompanying the Senate report into the health expressed concern over high rates of male suicide, no attempts to recognise and encourage promising interventions outside of the mental health system were included. I mean, one simple recommendation would be to ask the Child Support Agency to count its own dead. We count them for them. More than 5,000 dead so far since Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister. We'll be back next week. Should be an interesting show. We'll try and run as much as possible of tonight's forum in next week's program, and that should give you it's a very controversial subject at the moment, the whole push against shared parenting. So we'll be back next week looking at that. And don't forget, dadsontheair.net, our new website. Our researcher and webmaster Greg Anderson has done an absolutely wonderful job getting a new website for us, dadsontheair.net. We'll be back next week.
Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare.